Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Comp Talk, episode 88 of Luke's Lounge here on the Riptide Podcast, where we dissect everything comp related, especially in this episode, the Cintra Pro in Praia Grande. Sorry about the pause there. I just had a bit of an aneurysm slightly pass through my brain, but don't worry about me. Let's move on to my co-host, Sean Gregory Cooper. Thank you for joining me on this fine Thursday evening, brother. What is happening down in Corrimal?
Yo, Luke Aloysius. It is freezing cold again. Everyone thought summer was here, but they were wrong, as always. And it's fucking freezing. But haven't done a lot of bodyboarding, to be honest. It's been pretty, kind of had a, the East Coast finally went flat. I think it was a good winter. I think you would agree with that, wouldn't you? There was lots of waves, lots of swell.
I would have to
And
say that the first 2 months, probably August, let us down ever so slightly, but beggars can't be choosers. And if you're looking at the first 2 months of winter and breaking down a percentage, you're looking at 66% versus 33%, essentially, you know what I mean? You could do like 66.6 by 33.3%. Really want to break it down to the decimal point, but yeah, for sure, man. On average, it was a pretty darn good winter, and there was a flurry of waves there in the first half. But you're right, it's gone flat, and we've been on the shovel and the water test kit and the grind, and making sure rust stains don't stay in those beautifully interiors. Sean Gregory, as I know you're talking off air about having almost a heart attack at a customer's house recently with a bit of possible leakage from underground corrugated iron, but
Yeah, it was a funny looking stain, but yeah,
fish, okay.
that's the thing. There's been no, not only has the waves stopped, but the weather came good as well, which has been, I reckon, was one of the worst years for rain. But and there's been no excuse. You have to go to work because there's no waves and there's no rain. What do you do, mate? I've been doing 5 days.
Usually you're a kind of 3 day a week kind of man, aren't you? You're just working here and getting a nice little walk on the beach there, maybe a couple of brews at the local coffee shop. I know how you roll, bro. Like you real, like
Oh,
you know, you're good with your
mate,
time
you're
and you
the
show up, man around town kind of thing. But I know you're fucking taking the piss half the time, mate.
King of the 2 hour lunch break, mate. I know what you're up to. I know exactly what train you're on, mate.
Yeah, my change is, well, Mike's in a lunch break can occasionally, you know, extend further into the afternoon, just because, yeah, I've got a van with a bed, you know, you can kind of lay down, get the feet up, you know, yeah, just exercise in so many different ways in that van. So yeah, but let's stop rambling and stop talking about our lives and get into the competition at hand. Man, you know, to be perfectly honest, like watching the Cintra Pro, the Cintra Bodyboard Fest, whatever they refer to it over there in the IBC land, it was pretty good. You know, I enjoyed the waves for what they were. Again, like as a spectator watching it, you're not getting heaps of bang for buck just because it is a tricky beach break, and sometimes the tide can really play havoc. But you know, from a core bodyboarding enthusiast perspective, it was really entertaining because you saw the heat strategy come in. You saw how people had to either make big points out the back when the tide was low and things weren't linking up to the inside shore, or when the tide was high, you could really milk those extra points out on the inside. And I guess the eventual victor, who stays in the world title race, Pierre Luis Costes, was probably the best exponent of that. He killed it, man, and it was great watching him, you know, win that event and keep that world title race alive with Amira Solovetas. And on the women's side, bro, it was cool to see a new world champion being crowned here in Sintra, Maria Viana. Epic work by the Brazilian. So yeah, all around, I'd have to give it probably a 3.5 or a 4 out of 5 before we're going to rate it, because world champions were crowned. Waves were pretty standard for Sintra, but again, yeah, really like highly contestable and enjoyable to watch from a core perspective. How'd you see it?
Yeah, I reckon it was one of the better events of the whole year, I think. The waves, they got really good waves. Like, I think bodyboarding tour, a lot of people behind the scenes are probably drag on Cintra and go, oh, like, don't have that on the schedule. And they have taken it off the schedule in the past and just had it made it. I think maybe the men's weren't a part of it, and it was just a women's comp maybe last year or the year before or something. I think it might have been the year before, but I actually think it's a worthy contest to have on the tour, surprisingly, like, because it's challenging, like that beach has always got waves. It always seems to produce some, at least a couple of good days in the event. I mean, they got really good waves. Those waves look fun as, and guys like Pierre were destroying them to pieces. Like, could you imagine seeing him in real life? Like watching him on those waves, like he was just killing it, mate. And his style has gone up a notch on those new Moro Boogie bodyboards. I'm a big fan. I think it was a good time to move on from the pride look. He'd been there for a long time. He was looking really, really good, but now he's looking a lot better. And super stoked for him. Stoked that he got the win. And the contest in general, I agree with it. I reckon, like, for what it was probably nearly a 4 out of 10. The scenarios were even better, which we could talk about. I think we
Yeah,
should
they
talk
were
about the
juicy, hey?
women's. Yeah, the women's was
Yeah,
pretty
definitely.
cool.
Straight into women's. I'm actually watching a current replay of the semi-final versus Teresa Miranda and Kyra Shirashish. I can never say her last name. The Japanese competitor. But yeah, like watching the waves come in, man. Still beautiful. Light offshore, almost slack wind. The swell was supposed to drop on finals day, but it almost seems like it kind of held its own and still kept coming in nice 3 foot contestable size. And just great to see that, as I was saying before, there's a bit of a changing of the guard. We had Isabel D'Souza there in 2000 and it was 21, wasn't it? Taking out
22,
the
22.
world 22, sorry. And yeah, you've had Sara O'Hara last year in 2023, but it's swung to the Brazilians this year. And it was a really hard fought battle. But we've got to go straight to the main point of contention: the little bit of argy bargy, shoulder rubbing, and kind of moment that happens in the semi-final versus the eventual competition winner. And Sari O'Hara, who did lose out on clinching a world title that day. Can we just run through that, Sean?
Yeah, I picked it up, eh? It was pretty cool to
You did.
watch. I got the competitors. I thought it was a bit of Brazilian grit getting in there, but I was wrong. And it was actually the Japanese grit. And she was just holding a position, and Maria was trying to kind of cut, like, go around her to get her inside for the left. And Sari didn't want to have anything to do with it and completely blocked her, and there was like hands flying in the air, and it was fantastic to watch. If anyone wants to have a little look, it's like about 1 hour and 16 minutes on the highlights. Sorry, the highlights of the whole last day. And but mate, ten intense heat. Yeah, it's the semi-final. If Sari wins the heat, she wins the world title. So, mate, she wasn't letting her guard down. She was like, "You're not, don't go near me. Like, you're not, I'm sorry. Access denied." You know what I mean? It was
Full
awesome.
access. And it also kind of indicated to me that there might be a bit of intense history and rivalry between these two competitors that we probably haven't picked up on before. You know, possibly athletes on tour and the event staff there at the IBC have seen it play out, you know, in other heats and in a more kind of low-key fashion. But it, as you said, when you spotted this and alerted me to it and going back through it, it was quite evident that they really were at war with each other. And, you know, they obviously are going for a world title, but the score at the end of the heat, the semi-final, you know, indicated that it was so close and tense, and those little moments really played a pivotal part in it, because Sari coming away with a combined total of 11 with Maria, always her name, M-A-I-R-A. Myra, you reckon? Myra Viana?
Yeah, and, you're right. I was going to say, I was going to call her Maria, but I'm wrong.
I know.
It's Myra. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, that classic is uneducated Australian bogans, two of them right here on this podcast right now. But her coming in with, the eventual competition winner, Myra, coming in with that 11.25. So there's only 0.25 separating the two, you know, past and current world champions. So it was a battle for the ages. And to come down to Sintra, where the women's tour obviously ends for the year, and to have it in, you know, a pretty packed location. Like, I know you've spent a fair bit of time in Sintra and everything. You can't really tell on the broadcast, but from the hotel up on like the northern end of the strip, and then all the way down to the shops on the southern end, and then the whole boardwalk, you know, along the beach, I'm sure there would have been a lot of people watching that, and especially being such a nice day over there in Portugal. So it would have been quite intense, man. I was really surprised to see it play out like that. It was cool because it really shows you how much it means to them, and you see it in all other sports. Like, you even saw it in the WSL finals with Jack Robinson trying to get an Italo's head in that second round matchup in the final five there, and it didn't work, obviously, and pretty much the same thing has kind of happened here. Really interesting. It shows there's a lot of mongrel in the competitors when it comes to these do or die moments.
It does, because when you're watching online, you don't see any of that stuff, do you? Like, I mean, I kind of picked this one up by luck, to be honest. But you don't see any of the stuff that's going on out in the water. It just looks like they're floating around and catching waves. But there's no way that that's the way it is. It's like, I reckon it'd be super intense in these two-person heats. And Sari is going to be, I don't reckon she's slept since this, because like in that semi-final, like she started off, she was winning, she had 11 points, and Maria, I'm just going to call her that because I can't get her name right, Maria, she didn't catch a wave till the last 12 minutes, so she kind of surfed a 12-minute heat. And the problem was, Sari got her two waves, and she kind of like, I kind of reckon she didn't go hard enough. Like, she got 11 points, which was fine, but even on one of her waves, she got a wave that actually linked through, but it was almost like she was waiting for the wave to come to her, and it was instead of attacking it. And it's kind of like, man, you're going to win a world title right now. Like, just go for it. Like, And if you actually watch the wave, it's kind of hard to watch because she's kind of holding back a little bit, in my opinion. And if you're trying to win a world title, you've got to be going 110%, yeah? And then, like, Maria, like, finally got a wave, and she only got, like, a four and a half. And then she just sent it on a big set and just, like, busted through the door on a big roll and got the highest score of the heat, which wasn't that high, but it was a lot higher than Sari's because she wasn't being aggressive enough, in my opinion. And I mean, that could have been nerves. That could have been, oh, I'm going to build a house and get better and better throughout the heat. And then the waves got that they were kind of, it's pretty inconsistent. So, like, you know, it's easy for us to talk about this watching it on a computer, but that's what I took out of that heat. And then, you know, and then she went on like a raging bull in the final, mate. Like, oh, like I said, I reckon she's still up staring at the screen. Not happy.
Doing a bit of bed karate, yeah. Just going, what the fuck did I just do there? And it is painstaking, you know. I mean, I think Bago, you know, alluded to it on the commentary, and she even talked about the financial investment that a lot of athletes have to place into the tour to get, you know, anything out of it. It's like drawing blood out of a fucking stone half the time. So, you know, like there is a lot on the line, and to see it all come down to that moment where it was in your grasp and you've let it slip because of that mistake. And I know there's the clutch moments in sport, and it happens in every sport. So, and you know, there's, say, like in the NRL, there's, you know, tries that, you know, should have been this or that, or Brett Camorley throwing intercept pass in State of Origin and all this sort of shit. There's just things that pop to mind that, you know, oh, wow, like even when Stephen Bradbury won that gold medal, like all those gentlemen in front of him speed skating, falling over, like they're the clutch moments that decide, you know, heroes or zeros. But, yeah, just to be a two-time world champion on Sari's behalf and then to let that slip at
the last 0.25, she lost a world title, mate. Like, that's intense, mate.
It is, ouch. It is. And the argy-bargy at the start of the heat, the kind of, you know, elbows and you know, you're not coming into my space. It would have been all, you know, emotional driven and a fair bit of substance have been pumping through the veins there throughout that whole semi-final. So, yeah, it was interesting, Coops. I was into it. And when you picked up on that incident at the start of the heat, it kind of laid the pathway out for you know, a real intense battle, and that's what it was. 0.25 does not really get much closer.
No, like, a credit to Maria she still had to win the final to win the world title, so she's got the biggest heat of her life, and she kind of did the opposite to what Sari did. She went out into the next heat, and then admittedly Teresa Miranda from Spain, she I don't know what happened to her, but she just decided to just sit there and she didn't move. And Maria just had a blinder. She had the best heat, mate. She probably had the best heat of nearly her whole contest. She got 16 points as opposed to 3.35 points from Teresa. And had the heat, she could have won the heat on her backup scores. She surfed that good. And like, once again, sorry, like, oh, there wouldn't have been enough tissues in Praia Grande to cope with Sari's tears, mate, because it would have been devastating to watch. Like, because she still could have won the world title if she lost, but mate, she just went for it, and kudos to her. Like, that's awesome, amazing moment.
Dude, it's almost like Teresa Miranda, like, had fucking eyes bigger than her stomach, and this is what I'm assuming, before the final, and just hoed into a couple of pastis de natas and, you know, the beautiful local Portuguese tarts, and just couldn't move out there. It was just a fucking priority boy.
You reckon she was hoeing down, like, just eating, just smashing them, eh? Those things are so good, mate.
Custard and beautiful sugary treats, and that happens in Europe, you know what I mean? You've got great strong coffee, you've got your exquisite bakery treats, and you know, they do things in a cultured fashion over there, and it just probably got the better of the Spaniard. I understand shit happens, man, but you know, instead of doing bed karate over that one, she was probably just doing fucking toilet dance or something, yeah. Or other, like, just, you know, trying to flush the system out of all the her naughty ways. But that's all I can assume, because you look at a score of 16.15 versus 3.35 in the final, it's a bit underwhelming, especially essentially if the final should bring the two form athletes together. So, yeah, you know, she'll have to go back to the drawing board.
The way, if you're ever training for a beach break contest, the best thing you could do, I know momentum's a thing and blah, 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 a bit of luck and whatever, but the best thing you could do is go and watch the final and watch the two different styles of surfing. So you've got one bodyboarder who is basically catching waves, and she was moving around. She was going to one side of the screen to another. And Teresa Miranda had she had a dead set, two anchors on her ankles, and she did not move. She didn't catch a wave until the last 10 minutes or something. And she got to the last 10 minutes, caught a wave, and got a 1.5. So it's like, you just waited 20 minutes for the worst wave of the day.
Sorry, you go. I didn't interrupt, bro.
Oh, no. Maria just kept going, and she kept building a house and surfing different waves on different banks. I was like, that's how you surf a beach break. Just move around. And she
just about to say that it's a beach break. It's not put the anchors down and wait for the best one to pipe. You know what I mean? Where you get your two best waves, or at Chobes, or possibly front on, or whatever it is. Even front on probably offers up bowls on the inside. You'd still get high scores on. But you know those waves of consequence where you need the biggest sets. That's how you're going to get your highest points. It's going to be barrel, you know, related with a possible move out at the end. Like a beach break is get busy, as you said, build a house, keep showing the judges that you're reading the lineup well. It all has an impact on the subjective nature of judging and in itself. And just to not get into a rhythm and just perch yourself up there. I've surfed this beach. I know you have too. Like I've surfed a fair bit in Portugal over the time I was there, and lucky enough to be taken around by a lot of the fellas, especially Miguel Coelho and Antonio Soraya. And like when I would surf those beach breaks, especially a couple of the more challenging kind of wedgy ones off break walls, you would want to be getting in the rhythm, and you'd want to be getting wave after wave after wave. Some waves are going to be shit. Some waves are going to be great. Some waves are going to be mediocre, but you've got that rhythm and you're understanding the flow of it. Like you, looking at the screen right now, man, there are non-stop peaks coming in. And it's just like wave after wave. You're sitting there. You're just letting possible scores just drift on past you for some weird static game plan that it just obviously didn't work.
Yeah, like you're basically waiting for, in some ways, luck if you're just going to sit there. Because I guarantee you if you were there, there's no way – every wave's breaking in the same spot. Like it's so obvious here. And in all the heats I watched, whoever's not in priority, they're just moving around, and they generally just get another wave. Like, and even if it's not a very good one, then you go down the beach and then you see them on another wave, and they got a different wave because that they're in a different spot again. You know what I mean? So it's anyway. There's a lesson for the grommets out there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, probably being a bit harsh here, sitting in our commentary chairs, just, you know, dissecting the whole comp. There's so many things that come into it. And, know, sometimes people just pile out in the heat and just have a shocker. That's just the way of competitive bodyboarding. That's the way of competitive sport in general. And sometimes you just you don't show up. Like Ray Gunn in the breakdance in the Olympics. Like, what kind of game plan did that fucking crazy bitch have? Who knows? You know what I mean? But, like, she went out there with some sort of fucking plan.
Mate. Did you know that she's the only person in Olympic history to score a zero?
Really?
And she scored 0 points. And she's the only person in history that's ever got zero.
You know what's fucked up and twisted about that whole situation, Sean? I almost feel like it was done. I know we're diverting here a little bit from the current topic at hand, but you know, the Australian breakdance is a fresh topic on everyone's lips at the moment. I almost feel like it was done as a marketing ploy to further her career in another avenue after this, because any press is good press, essentially, and it seemed like she was just pushing so hard to be that different, to be that sensation, to be the what the fuck's going on. The amount of memes I've seen from her and even the interviews she's been on. It's just kind of like...
It looks like she's taking the piss, Don't you reckon?
Yeah. In the Australian colours. In the fucking boxing kangaroo, Sean Ria Cooper. It's a disgrace.
Yeah, no. There you go. You've just figured it out. Good on you. I agree. The wait, back to moving around. If we go on to the men quickly, so Pierre, once again, he had to win the contest to stay in the race. While Amir, where did he lose? He lost in the sixth round, yeah, or the fifth round.
Fifth round,
I
man.
think
Yeah, it was
he
unfortunate. And it
lost
was
in the
really close
fifth.
heat, too. Really close heat.
Oh.
We had Maxime Castillo from France with a total heat
0.25.
of 13. You had Isis Ravik,
Right, yeah,
Ravik,
brother.
Brazil, 4.75. Again, excuse the pronunciation of these names because we are fucked. And Amidas Solaveras come in with a 12.5. So you had a spread of 0.5 points against three competitors. Like it was close.
That is close. That's like, I'd actually like to go back and watch that heat. Around five, that is a bombing, let's be honest. When you're world number one, I mean, you still had a lot of heats to go, really. But in the semi, so I mean, Pierre had to go all the way, he didn't have a choice. And in the semis, he was stepping against L Lionel Medina from España, and he needed an 8.1, mate. And there's old Pierre, like, kind of just like paddling around him, and he didn't. Pierre was under priority, so he didn't have priority, and he needed an eight. And this set comes, mate, and Pierre just kind of just quickly just paddles up the beach a little bit, and Medina goes the opposite way, maybe one or two strokes, and Pierre ends up getting an 8.5 on the next wave, and like he left a
Sure, man.
banging. He left a banging air reverse bowl go begging and did a backflip. I'll have to take a point off him for that. But it was an amazing wave.
was, but it almost isn't that indicative of previous conversations that we've had in regards to Pierre setting the judging criteria almost with his backflips and how he came onto the scene and made that the move of choice, and then to see him do it on that bowl, which you could have done an air burst, you could have done an invert, you could have done whatever you really want, but it was a blatant air burst bowl. For him to do it,
Blatant.
it's kind of like blatant. But it was smart because he knows the judges are paying it. He
I
knows
know.
to seal the deal after a barrel like that, he's gonna get the
I
score.
know.
And
But he's not
like
thinking
it's
of
just
us, Luke. He's thinking of himself. He's not thinking of us. It's fucked.
Oh
Like,
man, I hope he keeps thinking about himself because I want him to win that world title. Like as
I
much as
know.
Amir Solaveras has been the most consistent and fantastic bodyboard on the men's side this whole year, Pierre deserves a third one. He's an immortal of the sport. His style is ridiculous. He's on the late and great Tom Moray's boards. It'd only be fitting for the Frenchman, grew up in peaky beach breaks of La Gravière in France, and obviously the long funneling point breaks of Morocco half the time, just to get it done. Because when I look at the competitors, for me, there's some really good up and comers, but I still look at Justin Roberts, Pierre-Louis Costes, and Amore Laverne as the three who are the most rounded and just so amazing to watch. Like it's their free surfing, their competitive surfing, just anything they do oozes class, and those cunts be at the top of the pile for my liking.
So Pierre's won two world titles. He won it in 2011, which is a long time ago. He must have been
That was when
really
the
young.
backflip first came in. That was when he wowed everyone.
2011, dude. That was ages ago. And
Yeah,
then
that
his
yeah,
next one
he's
was,
fine wine, just ages well.
don't know. I mean, his next one was in 2016, so that was 5 years later. So, I mean, he's due. It would be nice to see Amir get one. Like, I think he's well deserved. He's been probably the best surfer this bodyboarder this year. Like, no doubt. He's been on a roll. The fever seems to be wearing off a little bit, though. So, this could be a really cool thing for us to watch, mate.
It
In.
seems like the judges are coming out of that mid-year fucking Amir's fever that was just riddling them. throughout the middle part of the year. They were just breaking out in sweats and clambering for the fucking Panadol and Nurofen every time he put a fucking rashy on. But I reckon they've got past the fever and they're now looking to kick back, sip on some nice wine, and we all know Pierre's grapes produce the finest wine. Just ask Root. It's fucking legit. So he's there, bruh. He's there. He's there as a true force, and I reckon he can do it. And he was in this similar position last year where he was pushing so hard towards the end. And once this cunt gets on a roll, man, like he's a thinker. He's not just a talented bodyboarder when it comes to his skill set. He is strategically and mentally geared to be a killer in the water. So I'm so excited to watch Fronton. And obviously Fronton's an incredible wave, and I think it's the creme de la creme of locations on the tour. And so to see him possibly win a world title there, and if we got pumping waves for that comp, I think the whole bodyboarding world would just fucking rejoice, bro.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's got to win too.
He does. I could be wrong. Yeah, I think that's the equation. No, I think you are right. Emilio Soteveras has got to get to – he's got to be knocked out at a certain stage. I'm pretty sure.
No, the semis. So if they get to the final – I did hear that. So if they're in the final together, Emilio has already won. But if he gets knocked out in the semis, Pierre can still win if he wins the comp. That's pretty psycho, eh? Like – the thing is, man, they've got a lot of roadblocks on the way. Both of them do. Like, I mean, if anyone draws Amore, wish you the best.
Anyone
luck.
Draws cashless Robin Legros, who's out with a vengeance to, double up on the prize money he's owed, that it'll be fucking legit. He'll be like a fucking rabies-infested dog, Robin Legros, out there. Just, invert error versus on the reg. He'll be staring up at the judges, staring up at the IBC staff and just going, pay me the money. Where is the money, cunt? I reckon he'll just be fucking livid. So I reckon he'll be the one to really, if they run into him anywhere in the draw, I reckon, it might be their demise.
It'd be like, did you see that Kolohe and Dino thing where he looked up at the judges, he's like, get it right, when he came in for his seat. It was the fucking funniest thing, and then he got beaten.
Oh my god,
that's gonna be Legros fucking flapping his hair in the wind. Come pay me my money. Fucking the so much could happen. The thing about that wave is it's so dependent on what the waves are like. Like Legros did so well last year because the waves are kind of shit, and he just picked the eyes out of it on those all those insiders. But do you remember that years ago when Mitch Rawlins was in it, and it was fucking 12 foot or something? And imagine if it's like that, mate, and the boys have just got to full send it. It'll be so sick.
It will be, and we really do hope it gets to that kind of level, because that's what you want to see. It's like when they used to go to the finals for Pipe in the WSL, the ASL, whatever it was called back in the day. Like when you saw Pump and Pipe and it was 8 to 10 foot and there were waves of truth and consequence and you had to put everything on the line and the best surfer or, best boog in this case wins, it's just so much more fitting than, getting like 3 to 4 foot fucking dribbly waves. I mean, even front on 3 to 4 foot, it's not dribbly. You can still do inverted reverses and punt yourself out of trouble. But you want the slabs, you want the heaving dry ledges to be popping out in front of these athletes' eyes to make sure that they're fucking earning it and showcasing bodyboarding on the level in which it should be showcased, because we all know it's the best in heavy waves. And it'll just be such a sight for sore eyes. But, dude, we're not there yet, and we're still talking about the wrap-up 2024 Cincha Pro at Praia Grande. And we've got to give a shout-out to our man, the Brazilian Storm, the fucking, ridiculously good-looking meat-eating Brazilian fucking maestro in Yuri Valadao. Like, you know, again, you can say whatever you like about his style, or you know, what he's done, or what he's achieved over his bodybuilding career, which I still think is massive. But he's just not a household name, which is the point I'm getting at. But to see his competition results over the last this year, especially, but over the last 5 or 10 years at his ripe age of, you know, deep into his fucking 40s, it's just
I think he's 39. I think.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure he's not there yet. I did see that somewhere.
Close anyway. Let's just say almost 40, still ripping and tearing like that. Like, I guess you could look at Dave Hub and say similar things, Jeff Hub too, but it takes a rare human being to continue on that competitive path like that into your age. I know we can talk about Kelly Slater and stuff, but yeah, they're diamonds in the rough, and Yuri Valadao is certainly a diamond in the rough when it comes to competitive bodyboarding. It's just, yeah, it turns up week in, week out, and just gets it done, whether it be semis, finals, like, you know, just you name it, he's there.
Mate, the guy's a sight for sore eyes, isn't he? He's just amazing. Like, he's coming second in the world right now. Believe it or not. Yeah,
that just says it. There's the consistency.
I don't know, unless this hasn't been updated after Sintra. No, it probably has been. I wonder if he can win the title as well. If he's coming second. Maybe. Maybe not. But what the fuck is he eating, man? He's old as, and he's still got to the final of the Sintra. Like, that comp would be so hard to get to the final. Like, it would be insanely hard. And he got second to Pierre, like the guy that was ripping the most. Yeah, man, I don't know what the hell they do, like what he eats. Like, I don't know what it is. But he must be like a god that just floats around Brazil. Probably makes heaps of money. He's probably got a couple of kids, like, from randoms. Like, he's just the man. Like, you know what I mean?
Do you reckon he's in wearing Speedos in Rio most of the time?
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Just flaunting that meaty package wherever he goes on the beach. For sure. For sure, lad. Look at him. Look at his fucking profile photo. It's incredible. You just look into his eyes and you're like, you see what this man's been through, you know, from the
Imagine a night out with him, mate, in Brazil. Oh, my God. He'd be like a lord just walking around. Apparently that's what Glamour used to be like. He was, like, super, super famous in Brazil. We went to Brazil for a contest, like with Chapel and all the body, all the Aussies, and we saw Galambi out one night, and like he just like came up to all of us and he was like, yeah guys, you're in fucking Brazil, you enjoy it, yeah. And he was just like a lord, mate. It was fucking amazing, and it was just one of those places, like the buzz and the music, and holy shit, dude, it was so sick. But that was
like, was he coked up his eyeballs, or what was going on? He said it to me then. It sounds like he was on a heater.
He could have been. I'm not gonna confirm or deny it, as simple as that. But he was doing his thing. It was before the contest was on, and it was one of the worst comps I've ever been in. Like, fuck me, it was so shit. But man, the place is fucking amazing. Like, the food, the vibe, man. Oh, it was so good. So just imagine Yuri just walking around with his scungies. Mate, just so jelly.
So jelly. I am jelly. I'm jelly because bodyboarders here in Australia will probably never, ever get to those heights. But I'm just quickly looking at the points that are given for the Fronton Pro, because I've got the rankings here in front of me. I can't seem to see the points, but if you look at the rankings, man, like, you've got Tristan Robertson fifth, 10,861 points. Gabriel Braga, who, you know, was surfing really well in the start and middle part of the year. He's still up there in fourth place on 11,351 points. Pierre-Louis Costes just above him. I'm talking just above him by a mere 25 points in third place, 11,376. Yuri Valadao, the big man who just giving props to there with the Brazilian package, is about 400 points or 370 odd in front of Pierre in second with 11,742. And Amires Sotavelas, the favourite to take out, you'd have to say he's the favourite to take out the world title still. We're just kind of fantasising over Pierre coming from behind us. We love a good fucking underdog, brother. Up the underdogs. Yeah. Amira Sotavera sitting on the top of the pile, 12,948. So he is 1,200 clear, essentially, of Yuri Valadao, and it would have to be, you know, final ranking total points, only top four events account in the final tour ranking. This is updated on the 10th of the 9th, so it's valid as fuck. And it just seems to me that Amira would have to falter and fall short drastically for him to not be taking that world title.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at the PDF version, and I don't know why they've done this, but the total amount of points is just all of their events added together, but it's the four best. And Amire has 10,473 points as his four best. Yuri has 8,287 points, and Pierre has 10,001 point. So technically, he's only 472 points behind Amire.
So then, why on the IBC website is it misleading to give you those total points?
I have no idea. I don't know why they've done that. But like this, like when you download it, that's what comes up. But the other thing is all these scenarios, you've got to imply, like, that's his, like, Pierre's, how many comps has he been in? 1, 2, 3. Well, he's been in 4. So, like, he has to build on one of his worst scores. So out of his top, he's got to get better than 2,190 points, which he got in the Maldives, which is a third, okay? So Pierre's had a third, a second, a third, and a first. And this all depends on the amount of points, you know, at the event, because the Antofagasta had, like, Paddy's more, if that makes sense. So I think Fronton, if I'm right, if you go into the calendar, I believe it is $30,000 in prize money. Which one was it? Antofagasta was 40,000. So it's 3,250 points for Antofagasta, and it's 3,000 points. So it's Gran Canaria is on par with the Maldives. I'm probably confusing the fuck out of everyone right now, but like, basically he's got a, so in the Maldives, he got a third, which was this. I'm talking about Pierre. He got 2,000. Basically, he wants. He's got to win. Simple as that.
Yeah, but what does Amires have to do? Because Amires is already sitting. Yeah, so four best. Sorry, now I am saying that. Yeah. He's sitting in third, though, but he really is only 472 points shy of Amires. So it's actually a lot closer than you think.
Yeah, he's coming second. I don't know why he's ranked as third. He's coming
second. That is so fucking annoying, man. Like, if you didn't hit this and download this full thing, which, you know, I'm stoked that you can look at the stats and it's all spread out in front of you. That's amazing work from the IBC. But why the fuck is that not translated on your homepage, cunt? Because when someone just clicks into it, they don't have the time to just go into these fucking PDF files. It should be just on the front page, or at least have two columns. You know what I mean? Like,
I would say, get rid of the total. Just have the four best, because that's the final points anyway. Who cares about, or like?
So that means Yuri Valadao can't really win a world title. The only two people.
No. Impossible. Mate, I think it's just the two of them, because technically Gabriel Braga is coming second.
Yeah.
Because he's got third behind Pierre. And
yeah.
then it goes, the Brazilian Stallion, and then it goes back to Tristan, who's coming fifth. Tristan, I mean, Tristan Roberts didn't have his best year, did he? He got
no,
a win and
he
a
didn't.
kicker, and then he got a ninth, and then he got another ninth, and then he got a fifth and a ninth. Man, he's having a shocker for his standard.
For sure. It could be a kind of new wave of Groms coming through or whatever. I mean, when you look at the lineup, it's not really, is it? It's only kind of a mere days. You haven't really seen Socrates. He only did did four events. He also had a bit of a shocker there. Socrates, best final place. You know, he got a second in Anafagasta. But yeah, you know, just had a ninth, a fifth, and a 17th. He hasn't turned up at Sintra either. So, yeah, it's just it's unusual from Tristan Sands, I've got to admit. But, man, still talking about Fronton and possible flies in the ointment for these two world title contenders between the Spanish and the Frenchman. Liam Lucas is heading over with Anthony Miller here from the East Coast, and I can't wait to see what that little fucking curly head fucking do over there because, man, he can do a backflip. Like, he has got them on lock. We've seen it time and time again at Pipe, seen it time and time again at even the Cold Coast Bodyboard Club over the weekends. See all his clips. They're smooth as hell, and he's mixed it with the best over the last couple of years indefinitely. So it'd be cool to see what he can do over there, because if he gets the right conditions, he's really going to excel.
Fuck yes. So... just a little shout out to the IBC. Let's just see if they're listening. But for fuck's sakes, please just put him in the event. Don't make him go through the trials. He'll be fine in the trials. He'll smoke them. He's the man from Australia. But give us, like, throw Australia a little bit of a bone here, yeah? He's probably our best bodyboarder competitively right now at the moment.
For sure.
Like, maybe next to Louis, who's, I think he's injured. So let's put him as number one from Australia. We're going to fly him over. We're going to get it done. He's going to do backflips, but he's going to do everything else as well. But get him in the fucking event. Like, don't go through this whole fucking mumbo jumbo thing. Don't you reckon? Like,
oh, yeah. Like, I totally agree.
I'm begging you. Like, just put him in. Just give him a wild card. You gave Steph Cockerellis one in Sintra. Pretty sure he went straight to the main event. Let's do the same for Liam Lucas, because we need a bit of Australian fucking blood over there. And let's get something different over there and get it in there. He's going all the way to literally the other side of the planet. I did hear once that from Sydney, Australia, the opposite side of the planet is the Canary Islands. I could be wrong, but someone did say that to me once, and I've told everyone. So
well,
he's literally going to the other side of the planet.
Well, the longest flight in the world at the moment is isn't it from London to Sydney?
I don't know, but it probably is. It'd be so
I'm pretty sure it is, because and then you would think about where the Canary Islands are located out in the Atlantic and the way that
you got to go down.
But think about it. It's still on the same. Linear line as even pretty much, you know what I mean, kind of out there. So I reckon you bang on. Without doing any research on this and just trusting our intuitions, I reckon it is one of the furthest trips, and they should just throw a dog a bone. Throw old Liam Lucas a fucking bone. Get him in there. We all know it's a bit of a European South American world tour at the moment, and hats off to them. They're putting their money where their mouth is, and they're somehow smuggling drugs across the border to pay for these comp fees and these exorbitant travel costs that don't really, you know, end up in any sort of, financial remuneration coming back into their pocket. But at the same time, we need some fucking Pacific love in there. And if you get a couple of Australians, you know, if we don't do well in the comp, we'll be good at the after parties. We'll chug a couple of beers and we'll have a fucking good time on the dance floor and just get us in there, you know, like it's frustrating. And you know, and then the juniors coupes. We haven't even spoken about Jai Taylor, and I hope he's sorted out his 20 grand travel budget. He's dwindled that down a little bit to make sure that, you know, he's not wiping his ass with $50 notes when he's over.
Hey, Jai Taylor, when I heard that on the podcast, mate, you need to sleep under a bridge if you need to. Just get the fuck over there, mate. You do not need 20 grand. You'll be fine. You sleep on anyone's floor and you're going to fucking bring home a world fucking title. And I reckon the grittier you are, the hungrier you are, the better you'll surf. It's as simple as that. So fucking get up and Jai. Come on.
Yeah, come on, brother. Don't be staying in any five-star hotels over there and, you know, trying to spend all this GoFundMe money on these ridiculous, you know, budget constraints, mate. We need to see grit. We need to see people just, yeah, lay it down. But, you know, in all seriousness, Jai, if you're listening out there, bro, I was so proud of you getting there. Amazing to see, you know, the young Sunny Coast fella has just made his way into a world title race. And if you can pull it off, man, you only get a couple of bites of the cherry as a junior world champion, and it sticks with you for life, man. So, you know, huge ups to you. And you've got the whole fucking Australian bodyboarding fraternity sitting right behind you, bros. So get up them, get the fuck, clean up them, do it for the Australian boxing kangaroo, and just don't be scared to take a leaf out of Sari O'Hara's book and throw a couple of fucking elbows in there, brother, because we all know it means the world to you.
Fucking oath, man. Like, just, I mean, he's sitting at 10th. He's only done one event and he won it. And this, oh, and his innies on rights, they looked clean and crisp. And I think that's got one of the best innie bowls in the world over there. So let's go. Let's do it. He can do it. He can do it.
He definitely can. He really can. And I think he should. And if he doesn't, there's always next year, brother. So no pressure. Just fucking go and have fun and just love it.
100%, man. Mate, I'm looking forward to it. So it's coming up in October, yeah? It's got a pretty big waiting period. It's...
What's... Oh, 14 days?
Oh, man, I'm so sorry. I had it up a second ago and I X'd out of it. No, I think it's even longer. Here we go. Sorry. It is... the 12th to the 26th of October. And it's, I suppose, there'll be a few days in this comp, eh? Because you've got the men and the, oh, it's only the men's and the juniors. Why don't they throw the frigging women out there too? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be something to be discussed in the years to come, eh? Like, you know, the chicks have finished up here in Portugal, a very contestable wave, and just a, you know, a good time in general. But as the WSL's done with the chicks at Pipe, it's probably time to send the bodyboarding fraternity and the female side straight out to Fronton, one of the heaviest and most slabbing waves in the world. I don't see why the progression of the sport shouldn't go there. It should go there in the end. And yeah.
Mate, that's exactly where it should be, because, like, they've got lots of days there. They got plenty of money. They get it done. What are they doing? What's Denny Hernandez? What's he like? Doesn't want to run an extra day of contest or something.
I think also too. For example, like, there are some really good female bodyboarders out there that are charging in big waves. You know, and you've got Alexandra Rinder, she goes pretty hard in, like, big waves here on the East Coast. You know, we love our Sophie Jane. She goes really well in the big stuff too, and gives it a red hot crack. Like, there's no doubt that there's some really good females out there pushing it. But on a general consensus on the female competitive side of things, I don't know if they're all that willing and wanting to go it. Because just from the only thought that I have is I don't see too much free boogan going out there from the chicks. So it's, yeah.
It's true. It's true, but I think there's only one way to find out. So, and I think that's pretty much what they did with Pipe, with the women. It was like, there are certain women that do surf Pipe, the most crowded wave in the whole world, but they always, you know, complain about the crowds, which is true because there's so many people. But it's the same for the men. Like, there's a lot of people out there for us too. So you just kind of got to get out there to dabble in the, you know, dip your toes in. And then the more you surf it, the more you get to know it. And then the better you get at it, the more confidence you get. And if they end up having an event out there, that means they'll probably have to go and practice. And then as the years go by, booyah, we'll be seeing backies out of the bowl. So maybe we're onto something, Luke.
Maybe we should be pushing this agenda harder, Sean, and see if we can kind of get some traction there, because I'm just seeing an ad come up for Frontum right now, and it is such a heavy world-class wave. It's just, yeah, it's all time. It's the ultimate coliseum for competitive bodyboarding, in my opinion. We've said that numerous times during this podcast, but it's like our chopes. It's like our pipe that we used to have. It's a proper fucking wave. It's one of the greatest waves of bodyboarding in the world. So, yeah, to get the chicks out there in the near future is a must do, eh? It's a must do. Calling all female bodyboarders, get the clam out there and drag it, because it'll be a good time. And you'll pave the way for fucking professional boogan in a female sense for the rest of your days and the rest of the sports days.
Calling all female boogs from Australia too. Let's get in the club scene even. I've been trying to get more girls into the Cold Coast Bodyboard Club, and it's proving to be difficult. And the Headlands Pro, we ended up getting three or four girls. I think it might have been three. Oh, I should know that, but I've forgotten already. But I like, if anyone's keen to travel, or like, I'd love to see it. We had three girls in a straight out final on the weekend, and the girls went ham, mate. Like, they were like lifting each other. There was nothing in between third and first, with Emma Cobb, Jane Keel, and Catalina Soto from Chile. And it was so cool to watch. And I was talking to them afterwards going, like, who else wants to come? And they're like, oh, we're trying to get this girl and this girl. And I was like, man, you guys got to get together. And you know, even if you just do the same club and you're all together, and that's how you kind of grow from there. So
what's the incentive? Cool. That's the biggest thing. What's the incentive for chicks to boog?
Well, it's more about for them to be pushing each other to create happiness, in my opinion, because I get happy off it. So
create happiness. That's amazing. Happy, happy, happy vibes all around. But think about it, man. Like, my question's serious. Why choose bodyboarding over any other sport? Like, fuck me, bro.
Oh, well, if you're in it for a financial gain, you're in the wrong sport. So, like I just said, you've got to be in it for the happiness, mate, because I love it. Simple as that. And
I know.
And the more there is, the more you push each other. And you never know. Like, there could be a little bit of money trickling in as the tides change. Like, you know, these things come in waves. They go up and down. So you never know, mate.
But my question is more kind of pointed towards, like, how would you get, say, like, if a chick's, you know, coming up and she likes to boog, she likes to surf, she likes to play soccer, you know, all different manner of sports there. Why or how are we getting females to choose bodyboarding?
Oh, yeah, like, I don't know the answer to that.
Neither do I, man. That's why I'm asking. I'm not.
No,
yeah.
I don't. You know, you just stumped me. You completely roadblocked me.
That's the biggest thing, is you see so many females going towards surfing. And the only thing I can really think of, there's a proper competitive base. We've touched on this before. A competitive base, competitive structure, competitive hierarchy to aim big at and to go all the way to become a Katie Simmers or a Molly Picklum or a Tatiana West. You know what I mean? Like, that's the biggest thing that I see that's missing. They need to be able to have a goal to go towards and almost have their favorite chick bodyboarders, you know, as their pin-up girls, as their posters in their room, as the photos in the front of their textbooks and all that sort of stuff at school, if they even do that anymore. But you know what I mean? From a point of view of like looking up towards something and to strive for the goal, it's so fucking.
Well, I mean, straight away, what you're talking about is what I was talking about in the beginning is the lack of numbers. So it's hard to strive towards something when there's not a lot there. Do you know what I
Yeah,
mean?
the competitive structure needs to be put in place for like them to then have
Well, I
something
mean, it
to
is
strive
kind of
for.
there, like, and it can be there if there's more numbers. So straight away in Cold Case Bodyboard Club, I think we've got 5 females.
I'm not
So a
really talking about
start.
on a local level, though. I mean, I'm talking about like on, to
I
go to
know, but
state and national and international. Like,
so
there is obviously, don't get me wrong, but like.
I think they do have it on a state national level. So that is there. So if there's more, that would get bigger.
Yeah,
And
but
then
properly done. You know, those state and national comps aren't done that well. Like, you even mentioned on the podcast beforehand about how they've shortened the day just for and cut entries off really quickly because they
oh,
want to keep
for
your distance
sure.
down. You know,
That
like there's
that's a
distance.
problem. That's a problem in all the divisions. Like, it's like, oh, come on, you're not trying to cut the day down to save money. Like, how's that going to grow any type of sport, you know? For sure, I agree. But I think all those other comps that I'm just talking about, the East Coast of Australia, they've all got a women's division. So, it's there. It is technically there, Luke.
It is.
You got to.
You're
It
putting your
is
Concepcion
there.
hat on here, aren't you? You're putting your El Presidente hat on right now.
I am, and I think it's like it's kind of. I'm trying to gather in the troops, but it's. I'm probably. It might be a long. Well, that's my. There's a. I'm on a path, Luke, and I'm walking it at the moment. And by the end, I'm gonna gather around my followers, and they're gonna get bigger and bigger, and you never know.
Well,
Maybe
you
I'll
know what
have
I really reckon you need to
all
go? I think
was
you need to, because the next generation seems to be on this platform and this one platform only. You need to become a TikToker, Sean Gregory Cooper. I reckon you'd look great as a TikToker. You could do so many instructional videos. You could be showing,
no.
how to progress through heats, through paying off judges and making sure your bribery that's on. Point, you could be looking to get your connections in the community to know to feed money back in and then have it as a tax write-off and probably other pieces of stuff off it. I know, that's something that we could really look into, and TikTok's the platform for it, I reckon. You'd be great, mate. You'd be great. Don't sell so short.
Mate, it's the only app I haven't downloaded, and I swear to God, I refuse. It's not gonna
Me too.
happen.
It's actually
I
me too.
refuse. I draw
Exactly.
the line in the sand on that one. I can't do it.
Yeah, it's a
It's too.
nightmare, and it's another distraction. Like, I'm a
It
distraction
is.
enough on fucking Instagram, let alone like TikTok. I don't even have Facebook anymore. I deleted Facebook about 10 odd years ago, and I've stood true to that. But Instagram has literally crept in like a bad weed, man. It just infested in my fucking head, and I can't get out of there. Zuckerberg is up in me, brother. He's got his fist so far up my fucking anus. Twisting my head either way down to his little precious screen. It's a joke.
It's so crazy, man. I agree. I'm gonna get up early and go for a surf. It's been a little while since I've been surfing. We've got an urban surf on Saturday. Some good times ahead, maybe a few little sneaky days next week that you talked about. We're not going to talk about where, but maybe a little surf.
Yeah, little holes, hopefully. Rub my hands together. Hopefully you're there and you can take some time off and pretend to your missus that
Maybe.
you're still at work and you're getting paid to serve.
Yeah, I've turned off the GPS on the tracking device of my phone, so.
Oh, how fucked is that, man? Lauren keeps turning that back on in my messages, like the fine.
Dude,
Dude, it's evil. And she knows where I am at all times.
that no, that's where that once again I draw the line. No,
Yeah.
because it's like this is unless you're going on a holiday and you could get lost, but it's very unnecessary. And I like how the fuck did that thing just turn up on on my phone. Like, I didn't put it on, and then it was
Oh,
on.
bro, just no doubt in my mind that Nanu might have just, clicked that little tab button on accidentally, as is Lauren. I swear to God, my phone's unattended. I don't know what fuck. I'm an open book, mate. You can look through my photos, you can look through my messages, you can do whatever. I don't care. I've got nothing to hide. But you ain't putting a leash on the wild rabid dog that is
Yeah.
living, you know what I mean? If for goodness sakes, I'm a fuckwit. You don't want to know where I am at all times, okay? Just let it be, Lauren. I hope she
You
listens to
reckon
this.
the does the GPS pick up sucker off
Oh, fuck. The GPS picks up everything. I swear to God, I was out in the backyard and I ducked up the road to get something the other day, and she's like, "Where are you?" I'm like, "Oh, I was just out in the backyard. I'm just quickly doing something." She's like, "No, you're not." And I'm like, "Yeah, I just quickly ducked up the road. I'm coming back now." And she's like, "Oh, okay." And I'm like, "You looking at the fucking GPS?"
Oh
And
my God.
she's like, "No." And I'm like, "You're fucking sick in the head, mate. This is
No.
you. Like, oh."
I shouldn't say this, but Nanu was looking at it the other day. Oh, I didn't even know I had it on. And she said that we saw you, and she got the kids to gather around, and they're watching me drive along this fucking map. And she said to me, "You stopped. And then you pulled over for a while, and then you kept." And I just went, no, stop. I'm not listening to this. This is fucking craziness, mate. Like,
Oh, it's ridiculousness, man.
it's
Honestly,
just
like,
not on.
listen, you got enough worrying about the deep state following your fucking, progress and your footprint around town, let alone your fucking carbon footprint they want to charge you for. And now you got your family and your loved ones monitoring everything you're doing. I
Oh,
know it's
yeah,
almost
but
the inevitable with the surveillance state that we live in, but at the same time, just give me some space to breathe. Like, I am that, like, if I didn't run a business as do you, sorry, like, I would be happily throwing my phone into a fucking river and just turning up with a Nokia one day and just playing Snake in my lunch break. Like, fuck everyone.
God. Can you imagine if one of your customers said, "Luke, why aren't you driving to my house?" You'd be, you would literally throw your phone out the window, eh? You go, "Nah, fuck this, I can't do this anymore."
No, I've done. I'd go stack shelves, bro. I'd be like, "Yep, sweet. I'll just,
Yeah, I
I'll,
mean.
live my simple life." But we digress. It's been a great comp talk, Coops. As
Great,
always,
brother.
thank you so much for joining me, man. We've definitely covered some ground, and we've gone through the Cintra Pro with a fine tooth comb, and you picked up on that crazy kind of semi paddle interference, not awarded aggression there in the semi-final in the women's draw. We've got, Pierre possibly looking to clinch a third world title in the showdown at Fronton with Amedes Olivares. The Australians are heading over, the Australian contingent, led by Liam Lucas, and we hope the boys can do us proud. And yeah, hopefully women's bodyboarding, the numbers start to grow and to throb like the main vein on my forehead, and we get some progress there. And if any listeners are out there in the podcast world and listening to this, and you do have any feedback, especially when it comes to getting females involved in the sport that we all love, please reach out on the Riptide DMs, and we'll endeavor to get back to you as soon as possible with some talking points for the next body. But until then, Coops, yo!
Yeah, bruh. Good luck, Liam Lucas, in Europe, and Jai Taylor, of course. I hope you win a world title, and we will talk to you soon. We'll talk to you once it's finished. Can't wait.
Giddy up. See you for the next wrap up, brah.
See you, Lukey. Bye, mate.
See you.